You'll all join me in prayer. Almighty Father, as we come before you at your throne this day, the Sabbath day, the crown jewel of your week, we are glad that we can come before you and honor you in praises and in thoughts and in blessings and in fellowship. And we thank you for guiding us, keeping us safe as we travel to and from. And we pray also now that you'll be with our thoughts and minds as we delve into your word, learn more of it, so that we can follow further in Yahshua's footsteps. We know that the days are evil and the time is short. So let us make good time of time that we have left, and that we can then one day, when Yahshua returns, to rise at the last trump. Be with those that are sick, those that have infirmity, those that are suffering from other pains, and give them the encouragement they need in these latter days. So we pray also this prayer in Yahshua's name. Hallelujah. And you may be seated. Time is an interesting phenomenon, and the calendar is also a thing of fascination. For believers, it's become one of the most controversial of biblical teachings. So many like to spin their own calendar, make their own way, choose their own days for worship and for honoring Yahweh. And for believers, it's become one of the most controversial of biblical teachings. Since this is only the second week of the secular new year, I thought it good to take a look now at how days, months, times, and years come to be in our world and where they came from. And it's amazing when you look at it, find out that, wow, there's so many things that are biblical, even in a secular calendar. One of those Lynx is the name of the first day of the month in the Roman calendar called Calendae. The word Calendae is related to the verb calare, and it means to call out. This refers to the calling out of the new moon when it's spotted on new moon day. You didn't know that the Romans had a day that honored the new moon. Well, they did for a while. Israel blew the trumpet at the first sighting, as we know, and so do we. We announce that the new moon has been sighted, and now we can start the biblical month. And the biblical month, of course, determines all Yahweh's feast days and so forth. Yahweh is adamant that we worship on the right days. He spends whole chapters, virtually, defining when those days are. Not only what we do on those days, but when they are. You got to get it right when he commands them. The feast, the Passover, the Sabbath, the new moons. And if it's important to him, obviously it needs to be important to us for right worship. Did you know that your wall calendar with its secular holidays and red numbered Sundays was created by a Catholic pope? We still use it. Pope Gregory, they call it the Gregorian calendar. Did you realize that the early American colonists, as well as Great Britain they came from, observed New Year's Day in March, not January 1st? Were you aware that today's calendar was a revision when the old Julian calendar became 10 days out of sync with the seasons? So in order to bring the date forward for the celebration of Easter at the time by the early church, Pope Gregory erased 10 days from the calendar, giving the world the secular calendar used today. We're off 10 days, we'll just erase them. Imagine doing that today. Well, you'd have pandemonium. I got a doctor's appointment and the day is no longer there. I have this and that to do on that day and I can't do it now. It's no longer there. Millions are oblivious to such a everyday facts, not to mention hundreds of key biblical directives that we find in Yahweh's word related to his calendar. When encyclopedias are updated, they take out the old information to make way for the new information. Well, that old information is pretty key historically. If you have I like the 11th edition Britannica because it has a lot of that old information in there. Gives you information that you didn't hear about, didn't know about, like for Xmas and for Easter and for all these other days that the world likes to observe, and as well as many other things too. Many people don't realize that, they just kind of live in the world. They live for the now. So what happens now is what's key to them. But historically, it's very important. And time also has things to do with understanding. Time also changes perceptions when it comes to history and doctrine as well. Someone once said, it's always about timing. If it's too soon, no one understands. If it's too late, everything is forgotten. In its best way, the calendar presents a challenge to Yahweh's people. Besides the biblical calendar, the seven-day week, even the months of our secular calendar reveal a biblical origin. The historical thread and biblical influence in the development of the secular calendar is related to how the Bible's calendar works. For instance, you ever looked at the days of the months? September, septem. It's Latin for seven. October, octo, is Latin for eight. An octopus has eight legs, eight arms. November, novem, from the Latin, means nine. And December, decem, means 10. Well, wait a minute. September, seven, October, eight, Latin for eight, November, nine, December, from the Latin meaning 10. But they aren't in the modern calendar. By nomenclature alone, January should be the 11th month and February should be the 12th month. But wait, those are the first and second months of the new year. What's going on here? They should not be the first and second month of a year historically. In the biblical calendar, March or March-April starts the new yearly cycle. And March was the first month in the Roman calendar, believe it or not. This is where the original 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th months got their enumeration. Because even Rome counted March as the first month of the year. So you go from there, and then you end up with 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th months. But Emperor Julius Caesar changed the calendar from the start of the year in March to January. And he also disregarded the new moons in his Julian calendar. These emperors just fiddled around with things like the calendar, which is basic to existence. Ever wonder why February is shorter than all the other months and has a leap day like last year, February last year, 2024, was a leap year, had a leap day. It was an idea that Julius Caesar got from the Egyptians. And being the last month of their calendar, the Romans made February a catch-all month. Well, we'll just play with the numbering of this month, February. It normally has 28 days rather than the usual 30 or 31, except when an extra day was added every 4 years, like last year, to even things up. Those who would not accept the new calendar with its January new year, they preferred the more biblical, the March beginning. They were called April Fools because they wouldn't change. We note the following in our article, The Two Faces of New Year's. Quote, although most Catholic countries adopted the Gregorian calendar, almost immediately, it was only gradually accepted among the Protestant countries. The British, for example, did not adopt the Reform calendar until 1752, which was 170 years after it was introduced. Until then, the British Empire and their American colonies still celebrated the New Year in late March or early April. Do you think they knew something about the biblical calendar and didn't want to change it? The beginning of the year? A lot of people are factually challenged. Another perception goes, if you didn't know history, you didn't know anything. You were a leaf that didn't know was part of a tree. It's very important to know history and what's going on to define and understand our world today. You got to know where all these things come from and how it works and why it works this way. If you're going to try to steer, you know, through and get the truth. And so it is when we at YRM teach the faith that was once delivered to the scriptures, to the people by the scriptures. Skeptics, unstudied in the word, with their closed minds, say we teach false private doctrines. No, it's that our biblical teachings don't fit with tradition, traditional error. And even among believers, a big trigger for conflict is the calendar. I always say, you know, the biggest doctrinal problem we have is getting the right calendar for those who don't agree. Strong feelings come out when it comes to the calendar and the keeping of Yahweh's days. They don't keep the feasts on the same day. Why? Why aren't they keeping the feasts the same way? Why don't those people over there keep the new moons? It's all a calendar thing. All kinds of permutations that people simply don't want to accept. So let's delve into the calendar proper and do some myth busting here. Prepare to widen your vistas and maybe experience a few shocks along the way. New Year's and Christmas have more in common than just being a week apart. The celebration of the new year is directly related to the celebration of the new year anciently, and which came in the winter solstice, which honored in Christmas, the December. And whether Christmas or New Year's, it all goes back to sun worship. Are you surprised? All goes back. But I don't get involved in all that partying and celebrating on New Year's Eve, some might say. I just wish others a happy New Year. Well, the problem is that it's not the New Year as Yahweh established it, and he has intended to establish it on this earth. So today, New Year's is anything but new. The earliest recorded festivities celebrating a New Year go back some 4,000 years. 4,000 years, almost all the way back to Babylon. Babylon seems to be the nexus of most pagan worship, most pagan ideas, most false worship. And so, no wonder Yahweh calls it Babylon the Great. Revelation 17:5, and upon her forehead was a name written, Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth. A mother gives birth, we know, to children. And that is what she does. And Babylon birthed many false worships, many false ideas, many errors throughout all the world. Mystery here refers to knowledge given by special revelation. It's Yahweh who enlightens his people to the truth versus deception that shackles the world. Most are blinded by the light because Yahweh is calling only a little flock to follow him. He calls his people out of darkness, and there's a lot of darkness in this world. They are the first fruits to be firstborn among many to come. Yahshua explains these dynamics in Matthew 13, starting verse 11. Because it is given unto you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it is not given. For whosoever has, to him shall be given, and he shall have more abundance. But whosoever has not, from him shall be taken away even what he has. Therefore, speak I to them in parables. Some say, well, parables, oh, he did to make things clearer. No, he spoke parables to hide things, conceal them, because they weren't to understand it at this time. Therefore, speak to them in parables, because the seeing see not, and hearing they hear not, neither do they understand. And in them is fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah, which says, by hearing you shall hear and shall not understand, and seeing you shall see and not be and not perceive, for this people's heart is waxed gross, and their ears are dull of hearing, and their eyes they have closed. lest at any time they should see with their eyes and hear with their ears and should understand with their heart and should be converted and I should heal them. But blessed are your eyes. You see, you understand. For they see, and your ears, for they hear. For verily I say unto you that many prophets and righteous men have a desire to see those things which you see and have not seen them, and to hear those things which you hear and have not heard them. Isn't it amazing? The prophets knew a lot, but they didn't know what's going on now. They had an idea, but they didn't know. Look, like even the angels want to know what's going on, but Yahweh didn't reveal it to them, not yet. Well, as for annual timing, the Babylonians went by the first new moon following the vernal equinox, the day in late March having an equal amount of sunlight and darkness. You know, what's interesting about the vernal equinox is it's not the same here as it is at the equator. It's defined by equal night and day at the equator. Well, we're like 2-3 days waiting for the equinox to come. It hasn't come here yet because we're north of the equator. So how can you go by the equinox here? Like, you know, we'll say, well, we wait till, like, you know, we go by what it is at the equator. Well, then they also say, well, we go by the Sabbath when it comes here. But we go by the feast day that comes to Jerusalem. So you just pick and choose. You wait for, you go ahead and find out what the feast day is observed in Jerusalem, Passover and so forth. But the Sabbath, you wait till it comes to you. So which one is it? And that's the same thing with the equinox. Are you going to keep it at that time at the equator like the U.S. Naval Observatory says? Or are you going to wait till it actually gets here north of the equator? You got to make that decision. It's not as easy as you think. So they also kept a pagan religious festival called Akitu, the Babylonians did. The first new moon following the vernal equinox. It's a day in late March having an equal amount of sunlight and darkness. Akitu, a celebration marking the sowing of barley, by the way, isn't that interesting? Barley in autumn and the cutting of barley in spring. In Babylonian religion, it was dedicated to Marduk's victory over Tiamat. Whoever that guy is, I don't know, but it's some kind of pagan deity. In contrast, the Egyptians started their new year on September 11th. September 11th. Think of that. That's pretty consequential in our day and age. The Phoenicians' new moon began at the autumnal equinox, September 21. The Greek year was to begin with the first sighting of the new moon after the summer solstice. Everybody's got their own calendar. Everybody's doing one thing or another. These cultures began the new year in the autumn, which likely influenced the Jewish secular new year. You know, they say that the Rosh Hashanah is the new year. Oh, it's not. Not according to Yahweh's word. Abib is the new year. Abib, not the seventh month. How can you begin a year at the seventh month? I don't get it. But that's what they say. Rosh Hashanah is the new year. Well, it's the secular. You have to define it. It's a secular new year. So they got two new years. They got the biblical one. They got the secular one. The biblical one is Abib 1, the first month that comes in springtime. Well, secular in terms of the Rosh Hashanah is a feast day, but it's not really the first day of the year. So we now jump forward to Rome, the latest culture to influence today's popular worship. The early Roman calendar consisted of only 10 months and 304 days. I don't know how they recognize that or reconcile that with celestial bodies, the sun and the moon and so forth. But as in the Bible, most Roman months were simply numbered. They weren't named. Bible talks about the first month. Abib is the one named, but then you got the different months after that, second month, third month, fourth month. Only later in Babylonian captivity did they put names to some of these months. As in the Bible, most Roman months were simply numbered. The month of January did not even exist until around 700 BCE. when the second emperor of Rome, Tiberius Caesar Augustus, added the months of January and February. I guess he realized there's got to be 12 months in the year, not 10. So the first time the new year was celebrated on January 1st was in Rome in 153 BCE. The New Year's Day was moved from March to January for the following reasons. Number one, to honor the deity Janus, where we get the month January. Janus was the two-faced deity, one looking back to the old year, one looking forward to the new year. I guess you want to call someone two-faced, he'd be the one. And because it was the beginning of the civil year, the month when the highest officials in the Roman Republic began their one-year tenure. So they did it for political reasons. The government rulers began their tenure then, so we'll make that the new year, along with Janus. And now we come to some really interesting stuff. Janus, the two-faced deity, held sway for this, but the Romans celebrated by offering sacrifices to him, Janus, exchanging gifts with one another. Now we're blurring Xmas giving with the New Year giving. They decorated their homes with laurel branches and attended raucous parties. New Year's parties. What do we see that today? Well, we see it. People keeping New Year's parties in their homes or elsewhere. And all of this celebratory folderol didn't sit well with medieval Europe. They didn't like that. Christian leaders temporarily replaced January 1st as the first of the year with the March date, which of course is biblical, with its more biblical sanctioning. March 25th was the date of the church's feast of the Annunciation. So they started right, but then they got sidetracked again. The Annunciation, that's Mary announcing the birth of Yahshua. She's going to give birth to Yahshua. That's the Annunciation. So they use that as the start of the year. Where is that in Scripture? But this pious zeal of theirs was to wane over time. Pope Gregory XIII flipped the new year back to January 1st in 1582 with the justification that it was the date of Yahshua's circumcision. How do you prove that? Find a reason and use it, supposedly a biblical reason, and use it to your advantage. I don't understand it. But anyway, who can understand that church anyway? But this pious zeal of theirs was to wane. And so they had to come up with a justification. And they were really good at justifying pagan observances by melding them with biblical events, as we know, real or imagined. The big problem is, like Xmas, there was no biblical sanction for such engineering. They can't prove Yahshua was born December 25th. Everybody knows it. Anybody who's done any studying at all knows it. But they've been doing it for centuries, so they keep on doing it. In fact, there are many warnings against that, making up your own rules, your own days. Revelation 22:18. For I testify unto every man that heareth the words of the prophecy of this book, if any man shall add unto these things, Elohim shall add unto him the plagues that are written in this book. Didn't seem to bother them. Of course, then they'll say, well, we have more authority over the Bible. The church has more. We can make changes if we want to. I guess they'll find out when Yahshua returns. Keep in mind a key point. At the start, Christian church doctrine was a work in progress. It was a work in progress. It was not a seamless transition from Old Testament to New Testament, as it should have been. An excerpt from A History of Christianity, Volume 1 by Kenneth Scott Latourette, speaks volumes. It was, quote, sent natural that the first major conflict within the church should be over the issue of whether Christianity should remain within Judaism as one of the many, many sects of that faith, or whether its genius demanded that it become an independent and distinct religion. Well, we know what happened there. It became a distinct religion on their own. Yahweh didn't design a vast gulf between Old Testament and New Testament. It was hardly a bump in the road when you look at the history. You look at how, what happened, what the New Testament says of the Old Testament. It's linked. They have to go together. But the church went its own way, hammering out its own doctrines through controversy, infighting, even death. And it took 1,900 years and 21 church councils, ecumenical councils, to do it. With the first one held in 325 CE and the last one in 1965 with the Vatican II, I believe they called it. 1,900 years to hammer out their doctrines, and all they had to do was open up the Bible. There it is, Old Testament says this, New Testament confirms it. What more do we need? But when you're out there making your own rules and people are infighting over it, and rather doing what is logical, let alone commanded scripturally, the church convened church councils of bishops and other prelates over the millennia to decide doctrinal issues and to manufacture their own teachings their own way. Look at the flip-flopping and infighting over Sabbath and Sunday keeping for 300 years after the apostles. Why not just do what the Bible commanded and as Joshua did himself? Keep the seventh day holy. That's the commandment. Keep it holy. No, we're going to go to the first day of the week. We'll make that our worship day. Why? Because we don't want to be like the Jews. How about be like Yahshua? How about be like Yahweh? Rule by committee is an approach filled with minefields. Whenever you have all kinds of maneuvering, politicking, and backroom deal-making at midnight, then something's rotten in Denmark and Rome as well. And that's what they did. They had all sorts of infighting over these doctrinal changes. But there were also prejudices in play and enemies with which to joust. This tells us one thing. The Roman church was not interested in sola scriptura or scriptures alone. It was interested in blazing its own trail. And that included avoiding anything Jewish, and that included making the scriptures subservient to the Roman church, not vice versa. You know, if you ever debate with a Catholic, oftentimes they'll say, well, but the church says. So, what does the Bible say? The Bible is Yahweh's word. It's profitable for doctrine, reproof, for correction in righteousness, that we can be approved. The man of Yahweh can be approved in righteousness. Well, in designing his Julian calendar, Julius Caesar enlisted the aid of a guy named Sosigenes, an Alexandrian, Egyptian, astronomer who advised him to do away with the lunar cycle. Oh, that's how they lost the new moons. We are out there, we're looking for the new moon. People come, but what are you looking for? What's up there? Oh, we're looking for the new moon. And then they look at you cross-eyed, have no idea what you're talking about, because they took it away. They took it away. They took it off our calendar, secular calendar. So it floats all over. It doesn't start the first of every month. It's floating all over the year, all over the month and all over the year, because they don't pay attention to it. It doesn't mean anything. Don't add to or take away, Deuteronomy 4:2 says, and Revelation 22:18-19 says, don't add to the word or take away from the word. Take it as it is. Kind of like swallowing medicine. You take it as it is instead of changing it. In designing his Julian calendar, he used this Alexandrian astronomer. And this guy says, do away with the lunar cycle. You don't need it. And follow the solar year, like what the Romans did or the Egyptians did. I guess it was the Egyptians. Shortly before his assassination in 44 BCE, Caesar changed the name of the month Quintilis to Julius, July, after himself, of course. Later, the month of Sextilis was renamed Augustus, August, after his successor. But alas, problems persisted. Caesar and Sosigenes failed to calculate the correct value of the solar year as 365.5 242,199 days and not 365.25 days. They had a mathematical problem. And so an 11-minute a year error was born. 11 minutes a year. So which added 10 days by the mid-15th century. Now we got a problem. That's where that 10-day thing came in. The Roman Church became aware of this problem with Easter sliding further and further from the vernal equinox. And so in 1570s, Pope Gregory commissioned a Jesuit astronomer, Christopher Clavis, to come up with a new calendar. In 1582, the Gregorian calendar was implemented, omitting 10 days for that year. So if you were living in England at that time, or one of the American colonies, because the colonies came from Great Britain, they thought a lot alike, you would have gone to bed on the evening of September 2nd and awakened on the morning of September 14th. 11 days have been simply skipped as part of the implementation of the Gregorian calendar, which we have today. Some Brits did not react kindly when an act of Parliament advanced this calendar by 11 days overnight. Many thought it was a Catholic plot and demanded that the government give us back our 11 days. Meanwhile, on the west side of the Atlantic, Benjamin Franklin, he welcomed the change by writing, "It is pleasant for an old man to be able to go to bed on September 2nd and not have to get up until September 14th. I kind of agree with him there. Some have used this change of the Gregorian calendar to question the Sabbath as a seventh day. Well, how do you know the Sabbath wasn't messed up, you know, when they limited 10 days from the calendar? I think Jose made a comment about that here today. Well, the weekly sequence of days never changed. Only the numbering of the dates changed. The week went on and on and on, week after week. That didn't change. So only how the dates were numbered changed to line up with their problem there. Well, you've probably been asked, what are your New Year's resolutions today or on New Year's this time of year? The practice of making resolutions for the New Year is thought to have first caught on among the ancient, guess who, Babylonians, who made promises in order to earn the favor of the gods and start the year off on the right foot. The Romans began each year by making promises to the January god Janus. We've already talked about him. In the medieval era, the knights took the peacock vow at the end of Xmas each year to reaffirm their commitment to chivalry. As at watch night services, many Christians prepare for the year ahead by praying and making resolutions. How are we going to change? How are we going to be different? But all they're doing is perpetuating a pagan idea of ancient Babylonians and Romans to please a god. That's what they're doing, to please a god. Because it's not the new year. If you want to make resolutions, maybe at the end of the Yahweh's, not the end of the year, but in Yahweh's beginning of the year, that might be something. But when you're adhering to a pagan practice, I don't think we want to be doing that. The ball. We've all seen that big ball, you know, they drop in New York City. What's that all about? Big ball. Well, in the United States, the most iconic New Year's tradition is the dropping of the big ball in New York City's Times Square at the stroke of midnight. The ball has roots in time telling, believe it or not. The event was inspired when balls were used by ship navigators in the 19th century to calibrate their chronometers. So it's a time thing from naval people to calibrate, make sure their time pieces are, I don't know how it works, but that's up to the use. Various towns and cities across America have developed their own versions of the Times Square ball, the ritual, organizing public drops of items ranging from pickles in Dillsburg, Pennsylvania, to possums in Tallapoosa, Georgia, at midnight on New Year's Eve. Crazy stuff. doesn't mean anything at all. But they like tradition. They like to do things year after year, even though it's nonsense. Some sources say that the first New Year's festivals were held in Mesopotamia. All of these customs, from drinking and partying to noisemaking and fireworks and all this falderal going on, have been handed down to our world through history in one form or another by various pagan cultures and civilizations. Rome, naturally, adopted many of these ancient customs as well as contributed some of their own. In medieval Europe, however, the celebrations accompanied the New Year were considered pagan and unchristian-like. And in 567, the Council of Tours in 755 abolished January 1st as the beginning of the year, replacing it with Easter and days carrying more religious significance. Well, not to be dissuaded, the church held to the date of January 1st by giving it a biblical spin, again, trying to tie it to the scriptures, considered it to be the eighth day of Yahshua's life, counting from December 25th when he got circumcised. Again, what's that all about? You've got to have a reason. So he got circumcised on the eighth day, as the Bible says. Well, if you're going to follow the Bible, why don't you do it all the way? You know, count by Bible calendar, not by an event that you want to tie to your calendar. So anyway, when he got circumcised on the eighth day, that's how they reckoned the Feast of Circumcision, eighth day of Yahshua's life, from December 25th, and following the Bible's circumcision 8 days after birth, on which the child is formally given his or her name. Well, we understand the right calendar is essential to Yahweh. You go back to Leviticus 23, and each feast day mentioned there has a date tied to it. You count, 10 days from the new moon. You count 7 days. You count, all of these things have a time reference to them that means that's how they're supposed to be observed. Observe it. Observe these days at this time. Don't make up your own. Don't go by tradition. Don't go by Babylon. Go by the Bible. So that's what we try to do. Without an accurate biblical calendar, Yahweh's people would be unable to obey him. That's the way it is. Keep it on the wrong day. Are you obeying him? When he says keep it on this day and you're keeping it on that day? No, you're not obeying him. That's why it's so important for us to get it right. That's why we agonize so much. We put out a calendar. We want to make sure it's right, as much as we can tell by the parameters given in the Bible. So, without an accurate calendar, biblical calendar, you just can't obey Yahweh right. Now, you might make the mistake, and he understands that, but you still strive to get it right. Yahweh told his called out ones they were to assemble at certain times of the year to observe his feast days, and he didn't mention April or October or any of the other Gregorian calendar months. He used words like 10th day of the first month or the first day of the seventh month to pin down the feast observances exactly how he wanted them done. He says, "But the man that is clean and not in a journey and forbears to keep the Passover, even the same soul shall be cut off from among his people because he brought not the offering of Yahweh in his appointed time." Yeah, you got to get it right. "That man shall bear his sin." Numbers 9:13. Yahweh instructs us to observe all his feast days at precise times. In Leviticus 23:4, he tells us, "These are the feasts of Yahweh," his feasts, not Roman feasts, not Babylonian feasts, but his feasts. Leviticus 23:4, "Even holy convocations, which you shall proclaim in their seasons." So you even have to get the seasons right. You even have to get the months right at the commanded time. Never does he say that his commands are only for Israel or just for Jews. He says, generally, man is to keep these days as I command. Nowhere do we find a true worshiper in the New Testament keeping Xmas, New Year's, Easter, or Sunday. But we find all over the Bible believers in Yahweh's people, Yahshua himself, keeping the commanded feasts of Yahweh. They're there. People wonder, why are you keeping these ancient Jewish holidays? Number one, they're not ancient, therefore today. Number two, they're not Jewish, they're Yahweh's. He never tells us to observe holidays of our own making at the times that we choose, any old time, or try to tie it somehow to a biblical event. He never tells us to do that. He tells us how to do it. It's so plain and simple. True worship means keeping Yahweh's times as he commands, and if we don't, sin lies at the door, and we don't want that either. If you want to know more on the subject of New Year's, we have an online study called The Two Faces of New Year's. Just type in yrm.org/two-faces-New Year's. That's hyphenated as well. It begins this way. Caesar's idol was named Janus, from which we get our month January. The emperor thought his deity would be the suitable portal to the new year, as one of his faces looked forward to a new year, the other backward. That's the sanitized version of New Year's. The messy and convoluted historical version, history of January 1, reveals a chronological confusion, political intrigue, race hatred, fuzzy math, all in an attempt to improve upon the biblical calendar as inspired by our Creator. And if you do look at it, it's a quick read, and I think you'll enjoy it. So I invite you to do that if you want to learn more about the biblical calendar and the errors of today's calendar. Even though we have to follow it in our culture, it's not one we worship by. We worship by the one Yahweh gives us, and that's what's important. So may Yahweh bless you, and have a great Sabbath.